Welcome to the Innovation in Healthcare podcast, produced by the Academic Health Science Network for the Northeast and North Cumbria, which supports innovation in all its forms within the NHS and social care. This podcast showcases some of the amazing work that we do to transform healthcare by driving the spread and adoption of innovation, both regionally and nationally. The HSN deliver a national programme of work looking at cholesterol and lipid optimisation. Recently, there have been a number of new non-statin treatments that are now available on the lipid pathway, which will help patients to reduce their cholesterol and therefore reduce heart attacks and strokes. Inclisiran is one of these new therapies, but what's really important is the way it's been delivered, taking a population health management approach, meaning patients can access treatment much more quickly as it is rolled out through primary care. This is a world first and an exciting time to be involved in lipid management. And today we are going to be talking to two pharmacists who are involved in lipid optimization and management and who have experience of initiating and managing patients on one of these new therapies, Inclisiran. Hi, I'm Nikki from the HSN, and I've been fortunate enough to be joined today by two fantastic colleagues of ours. I'd like to introduce a couple of pharmacists that we work with. Firstly, we have Barry and Matty, and I'm going to ask them to introduce themselves. So, Barry, over to you.
Hi, I'm Barry Todd. I'm a pharmacy prescriber based at a local GP surgery. And we've taken a lead in implementing Inclisiran at an early stage. I'm also our PCN pharmacy lead.
Great, thank you very much, Barry. And Matty?
Hi there, my name is Matthew Hart and I'm a specialist clinical pharmacist based at Newcastle Upon Tyne Hospitals. I'm very lucky with the role that I have at this moment in time that I'm be able to work alongside the lipid service at the Newcastle Upon Tyne Hospitals and also alongside the vascular surgeons as a surgical pharmacist at the same time.
Brilliant. That's great. Thank you. Okay, so we've taken the opportunity to come together today and do this podcast to talk about Inclisiran and how that has been introduced and how we manage it, but also to discuss the successful collaboration between primary care and secondary care in the management and implementation and how secondary care have supported primary care, as well as how the role of the pharmacist has been elevated through the delivery of this new novel therapy. So first of all, let's get back to basics. And Matty, can you just tell us a little bit about what is Inclisiran?
So Inclisiran, it works by targeting the PCSK9 enzyme as opposed to PCSK9 inhibitors, which are antibodies which inhibit the circulating PCSK9. So Inclisiran is a chemically synthesized small interfering RNA molecule that reduces the production of PCSK9 through gene silencing.
Thank you very much. Okay, Barry, so could you talk a little bit to us about the sort of the practical delivery and the management and sort of implementation that you've experienced in primary care around Inclisiran?
Yes, I think what we need to understand is Inclisiran does have a novel place in delivering of drug therapy, medicine therapy. We're talking about population health management here, of being able to treat at scale cardiovascular disease, reduce morbidity and mortality. So Inclisiran, instead of being a novel drug introduced in secondary care, its place is primarily in primary care. So my initial engagement with Inclisiran was actually with Matty, because what Matty was doing, maybe Matty, you'd like to say what you were doing.
Yeah, so my place where I work in secondary care at this moment in time is identifying patients who come through the vascular service at Newcastle Upon Tyne Hospitals, looking at their lipid profiles and seeing, are these patients currently to secondary prevention targets? So these are patients who have had heart attacks, strokes, or have got peripheral vascular disease, for example, and basically going through and looking at to see where can be optimised from their drug therapy behalf. So these could be patients who are on statins but are not to target currently, and take them further down the pathway, which since Inclisiran has obviously come to the market and been adopted on multiple different guidelines, which we can go into further. So you have your national guidelines, which is AAC guidelines, which is the national ones, and also the NELI guidelines, which have been adapted towards the North East and North Cumbria, which, lucky enough, Inclisiran sits within, which is an avenue which can be utilised at the same time. Which what happened was a patient who identified within secondary care took through the pathway to make sure they were on the right treatment, who unfortunately wasn't a target, which in glycerin was a good option for this gentleman at the time, which then I was able to then give a letter, which was then sent directly to the patient's GP practice, which I was lucky enough, obviously, for Barry to take up and take a lead, and that's where the first start of this journey began. Yeah.
Fantastic. Okay, so we've seen a really successful collaboration between primary care and secondary care between you two. So just wanted to kind of talk about that a little bit and just explore that through, you know, in relation to the management and implementation of inclisiran. So can you just take it in turns, Barry, from your point of view, what has worked well for you as a pharmacist in having this primary care and secondary care collaboration? Yeah.
So I think collaboration and networking and relationships has been key here. I think all the lenses came together when we were looking at this. It was less than a year ago when I was introduced to the Academic Health Sciences Network, who you work for, Nikki. At the same time, the IICS, the Integrated Care Systems, were emerging. We were having PCN pharmacists coming on board, and the lipidologists were getting on board as well. This was an opportunity to do something at scale across Northeast and North Cumbria with local lipidologists' involvement, with secondary care involvement, with the likes of Matty and others. But at the same time, having that support, being able with confidence to drive this forward. With a new drug, there can be a lot of sort of conservative approach, a lot of maybe kickback, and it needs somebody really to drive that. And me being in a particular strategic place within our PCN, I've been able to drive it across the PCN and hopefully form a sort of template for other PCNs to take on board.
And like you said, there's been many boundaries which, like you said, has to be overcome, which I'm sure Barry will go into further explanation of. Within glycerin. So for me, obviously, from thinking from my hat being secondary care, it's great that obviously this has been took up and brought to the forefront, really. And like you said, it's been really good from that behalf.
So I suppose really from your point of view, Matty, in secondary care, you might write that referral letter out to primary care and
absolutely
suggest that patient is started on any kind of therapy. Yep. But would you normally ever then be in a position to follow up that patient or see what's happened with that patient?
That's what it would usually be, but I think for in terms of me wanting to have an understanding to make sure that this patient gets this drug, there is ways and means of trying to find out the information, and that is communicating with the GP practice directly. And I think for me, in terms of what I want to see, I want to see the benefit in the lipid profile, because that's going to give the best benefit for the patient going forward. So if that's not happening, I need to question, what can I do? Because is there something that I can adapt my practice to help support primary care at the same time? So this is where streamlined collaboration between secondary and primary care is crucial. And I think it was great that I was getting communication straight back and some sort of interest. And even if someone who's unknown and picking up this referral letter, which I can imagine you get many referral letters from many different places, I think it's to then feel confident to go, by the way, hold my hands up, this is new, I don't know anything about it, but where can we go next? Where can I get more information from? And it might be as simple as going, I can give you my knowledge, what I know, or is there other routes that I can give access to Barry, for example, sitting in primary care, which might be through the drug company who makes that specific drug, or is it a collaboration group of patients who have got peripheral vascular disease, for example? Could it be the Heart UK website? And these are the kind of things which I could then support implementation, which yourselves sitting with the HSN would be able to help that process at the same time. So I think for me personally, I think it's been really good, and it's something that should be highlighted and it should be flourished. I think this is something that should be done, not necessarily just in one case. This is where you could broadcast across this, the full Northeast North Cumbria, but you could push this far and wide.
Because at the end of the day, you're both pharmacists, you just sit in different parts of the system. So to have that peer-to-peer dialogue and support and feedback, I guess, is important for you both in both your professional roles.
Absolutely. I think the great thing is that Matty works with Dr. Levi, who's the local lipidologist, I've got sort of, and I've also got people working in another foundation healthcare trust who pharmacists working alongside their local lipidologist. So it's a lot easier to communicate now with secondary care at a level that we can understand, and we kind of understand each other, we understand what the issues are. No question is a stupid question. I'd have to say that the likes of Matty, Catherine Tucker, Charlotte Scott at also clinical pharmacists, specialist lipid pharmacists, and their respective lipidologists. It's just really been, it's a big learning curve, but the support has been phenomenal, really. And I think it's just so important for somebody like myself to actually gain a confidence in the medicine. With that sort of backup for, and the other thing is, we're talking about sort of the overall secondary primary care thing, is that our local area prescribing committee, which is composed of in both sectors, they're right behind the medicine. It's formulary, so we've got just so much behind us to be able to push forward with confidence.
Now, at the centre of all of this, we must remember the patient. That's really what all this is about, isn't it? So what from your point of views, each of you, would you see as being the benefit for the patient in this collaborative primary care, secondary care approach that we've taken? Matty?
Yeah, I think it's just gaining access for different cohort of patients, really, to get the best benefit from the drugs that we have got in our armoury, for example. So from years and years ago, statins were one of the first things that come, which were revolutionary, classed as a blockbuster, really effective at reducing cardiovascular disease going forward. So I think now, obviously, for me and where I sit in, obviously, reviewing patients that come through the vascular clinics at the Newcastle Pontine hospitals, this is where they wouldn't usually have a direct access to someone who has got an expertise knowledge within lipid management, which, lucky enough, I've been able to do that. And then being able to rather refer them to the lipid clinic, I'm able to help intervene, do letters and communicate with primary care at the same time, which, say, for example, the patient that was identified, it was me who I took through a pathway, then was eligible for inglycerin, which would then further reduce their risk of development of cardiovascular disease, then that's what then caused a letter to be generated to the primary care, which then Barry was able to then pick up. The patient's then had the dose, he's tolerated it great, and like you say, that's what it is. It's very much everything we should do, the patient should be at the number one priority of that. And
so
I think that's what
works. Rather than being in silos in the stroke or vascular or cardiology, lipids just transcends it all, doesn't it? And you need somebody to have that umbrella view to be able to catch those patients and look after their lipid profile.
Exactly. And we're, at the minute, we're just scraping the surface. This is not something that is just an individual episode. These will be many that will come through the, who would need a benefit from this. Mm. And like you say, the reason why Barry has got a very prominent role in this within primary care is because the majority of patients will be sitting in primary care who haven't been identified, who will be eligible for this. And this is something where great collaboration, if there's someone who's working in secondary care who's identifying these patients going forward alongside primary care, you're going to get a massive reduction in the risk of developing cardiovascular disease by using drugs which we know we've got, which are really specialised and very much tailored to the individual, because the risk of side effects is actually fewer by using them. So that's the reason why, in the day, this patient's going to get the best benefit from our knowledge, from our drugs that we got, which then will prevent them, hopefully, not having heart attack, stroke, or worsening of their vascular disease.
So basically, I think we've got to go back to probably some of the figures that we're quite familiar with, but we know that in the UK, one person dies from a cardiovascular related condition every 3 minutes. We know that as far as we're concerned in the Northeast, we're the second worst ICS in the country in terms of cardiovascular morbidity and mortality. There's a big disparity between us and those down south. So we need to address those health inequalities at scale. For us, we need to be able to offer our patients something beyond atorvastatin 80 milligrams. Now, we're talking about secondary prevention here. inclisiran isn't for primary prevention, it's familial for secondary prevention and for familial hyperlipidemia. Okay. But we feel that, our patient cohort across the area here is probably disadvantaged for various reasons, but here's an opportunity to level up. And Matty's quite right. Secondary care provide, if you like, a kind of authority that say, well, we're using it in secondary care, but you really ought to be using it in primary care. So that gives a great sort of backup for us, for those who are a bit more sceptical than I am. But then we need to really do something which is at scale, but which is manageable within primary care. Now, there's loads and loads of pressure in primary care to deliver this, that and the other. And for some clinicians, this would not be a priority. But clearly, you know, if we can start reducing non-HDL cholesterol, bad cholesterol levels at scale, by using inclisiran on top of using atorvastatin 80 milligrams, then we're doing the Northeast a great service, I feel.
Just one further thing just to add on to what Barry's just said, obviously about the burden of cardiovascular disease in the Northeast currently. So with the impact of COVID, unfortunately that's had a negative effect on these numbers also. So at this moment in time, cardiovascular disease is at the highest level it has been for a decade, and that's because of COVID that has unfortunately pushed that risk up. Wow. Also, there is 30% fewer patients being started on statins or any medicines that have lipid lowering effect. So that in itself is obviously having a negative effect. But on top of that, 12,000 avoidable heart attacks and strokes are expected by 2025. And that's if missed treatment initiations are not made up for. So obviously our role sitting as a pharmacist and obviously not utilising these specialist services, which only have a certain capacity, we're able to increase capacity and get patients on the right treatment, which then would then reduce their risk of having a heart attack, stroke or a vascular event.
Oh, that's worrying, isn't it, really?
Absolutely.
So it really does need to be a priority. Okay, so we've talked about kind of what's worked well for you as pharmacists, benefits of the patients, but the fact that I'm sat in the room here with a couple of pharmacists, not GPs and not consultants, suggests that actually the role of the pharmacists have really been elevated through this approach in how NHS England have, taken forward the rollout of this through the population health management approach. How has the introduction of a novel therapy in primary care, Barry, kind of elevated the role of the pharmacist?
So it's been quite clear that as we've brought in PCN pharmacists, which are pharmacists who are centrally funded, who are joining along with a whole load of other healthcare professionals to help take some of the pressure off the GPs, it's provided an ideal opportunity to get them involved clinically.
Just again, thinking about pharmacists, so you've been given an opportunity as a pharmacist in secondary care to become involved in the lipid optimization of patients as well. So what's that, how has that impacted on the elevation of the role of the pharmacist in secondary care and what you've been able to do in secondary care?
Yeah, I think it's just a new role that has come about, really, and it's given me an avenue to sort of further get me teeth into a specific area. This is an area which it's evolving at an alarming rate. There is many drugs which is currently coming through clinical trials at this minute in time, which is to reduce the risk of patients having cardiovascular disease. So I think it's a new time where, with my time that's been in, I've been in now for coming up nearly 2 years, since me being in here and doing the role that I'm currently doing, there has to be about 3 or 4 more drugs that's come to the forefront, such as bempedoic acid, inclisiran, obviously further utilising of the PCSK9 injections, such as evoculibumab and iraculibumab, which is a bit of a mouthful to say, to be perfectly honest. But there is other drugs which is slowly coming through, which, if this model is to be utilised far and wide, these patients are going to get a massive reduction in cardiovascular disease, which in the long term is much better for the individual, but also across the full population. And like you say, levelling up and everything, these simple interventions can lead to big change. So that's why we need to get the ball rolling from day one down and get that message broadcasted that this is something where you can have a big intervention going forward.
So you two have really been critical in making this happen for the patients across the geography that you have. And we know that there are other people who have the same role as you who can replicate what you've done and have replicated what you've done. But it's great to get that perspective from your side and, you know, and hear the passion in your voice and the enthusiasm with which you talk, you know, to maybe get others on board to consider doing something really similar. I just wanted to talk about, so how does this fit with the sort of the wider primary care process, Barry? Because this is part of a bigger picture, isn't it? The benefit that this might, you know, bring to the wider population, and what this might do to health inequalities, how this might change equitable access for patients to more what may previously have been considered specialist drugs.
I think what's making it being part of an all is that patients in the past, there's shifts in people's perceptions of taking medicines and things like that. So say, for example, in the past, I think previous generations would rather take a tablet a day to sort of reduce the burden going forward. I think in current generations now, I think if there was injections that was available that you could administer 2 weeks rather than daily or every 6 months, for example, I think the uptake of that is a lot higher. So I think, unfortunately, with statins, in terms of people with bad press, I think with past side effects that they've had from it, there is a sort of a grey area where patients want to go with this. So I think giving them access to these therapies, which have been more adapted to current generations, that can make a good thing going forward. And I say that's something that could be utilised fully within primary care to then help level up things at the same time, you know.
Yeah, I think there's been a gap, really, in that for secondary prevention, you've had atorvastatin 80 milligrams, option to add in ezetimibe, but even then we are finding with a reasonable size cohort of patients that you're not getting the target. The target we use is basically the JPS 3 guideline of a non-HDL cholesterol of 2.5. You could get somebody falling in between having atorvastatin 80 milligram plus or minus ezetimibe, not getting to target, but not actually meeting the criteria for a PCSK9 inhibitor. So this actually does plug the gap very well. And my sort of perspective on it is that you can do a little bit of forward planning here. Atorvastatin 80 milligrams, how far have you got with that? Will ezetimibe get you to where you want it to be, 20% better than where you want it to be? If that's still falling short, let's just go straight to inclisiran if a patient's eligible for that. Okay. And my experience has been that people like the idea of coming in, getting an injection every 6 months. It's fairly straightforward. First injection, next injection 3 months, and then every 6 months after that. And of course, there is a place for PCSK9 inhibitor, but that is a two-weekly self-administered injection. And not everybody's comfortable with that as a patient. And so we've got something to offer them rather than just what we had before.
And PCSK9 inhibitor is a secondary care administered medicine, isn't it?
That's
so
right.
So patients would need to fall within a strict criteria and be seen in the secondary care service. So in terms of equitable access and population health management,
yes,
it would take a much longer period of time to reach a smaller number of patients, wouldn't it,
you wouldn't be able to do it with secondary care. I know for a fact that lipidologists work perhaps with a nurse,
if they're lucky,
okay, and they're very fortunate to be working with clinical pharmacists, and I think they know that. But even then, referrals into the lipid clinic, there's waiting lists. You're not going to get the big sort of population hit that you can do in primary care. So it's inclisiran's place in primary care is absolutely crucial if we are going to make a real difference in the well-being from a cardiovascular point of view of the UK population.
And historically, these new drugs were often administered only in secondary care initially, weren't they, for a number of years until primary care became a little bit more comfortable and familiar with them, etc. Yeah. So this is quite a different approach for a new drug like this for primary care, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And let's make no mistake about it, there are folk who are quite conservative about this, clinicians who are quite conservative, who are perhaps, they just sort of just say, secondary care should be doing this, we shouldn't, and they don't really take on board, they don't really appreciate what it is to take this forward. That's why we need people like ourselves to be waving the flag, driving it forward, because once it is established and it becomes part and parcel of regular practice, then we've broken down a major barrier. So it's, one can understand it because new drugs, there is a little bit of hesitancy. But what we do know about inclisiran is that it lowers cholesterol significantly, that the side effects are really just around the site of injection, bruising, a little bit of pain, perhaps a little bit of swelling, but there's been no long-term major side effects, systemic side effects reported thus far, and nor is there expected to be.
The health inequality agenda is really current at the moment, and there's a lot of focus around health inequalities and, you know, that disparity between access to services and medicines, etc. Do you see this feeding into that, Barry, the health inequalities of our CVD population in the Northeast?
Yeah. That's really why you've got to do what you can with what you've got. So at the very basic level, there should really be, we are seeing these patients year on year, our nurses are seeing them. You can train your nurse to manage lipids. You can use your PCN pharmacist to manage lipids, but you are seeing, you ought to be seeing, if the patients turn up, the entire vascular population within the course of 12 months. What an opportunity then to be able to do this. I one problem is that historically, I think clinicians have kind of looked at a lipid profile and have said, oh, that's good enough. You know, now we're coming to the stage where, well, actually, no, this isn't good enough. Let's have a closer look at this. What can we offer the patient? And I think that's a major step forward as well.
Yeah, and for just to further add on to that, I think what there has been, like you keep echoing within the last year and a bit, is these new drugs which has come to the forefront, which are coming more in the public demeanour and at the same time more at the forefront of frontline clinicians, for example, that is within primary care. So these are coming more and more at the forefront, which is giving these patients more access. And sort of obviously where it sits, and obviously we're advising for it to be given in primary care rather than secondary care historically for new drugs, for example. This is increasing the amount of patients that can benefit from this intervention. I know, for example, say for example, if Barry found a patient was like, yep, we need referring to the lipid clinic, straight away that patient will bottleneck and there will be a waiting list of so many months to be reviewed, and then there'll be a time lag from recommending something the patient actually receiving the first dose. And I think it's sort of streamlining that process. So say for example, where I say identifying patients who wouldn't routinely be picked up, communicating directly and efficiently to get it, so then the patient gets the first dose at the earliest opportunity. You've got to think there is no time better than now, rather than leaving it 6 months, 12 months further down. Absolutely. Where this patient's got further cardiovascular disease brewing, or it's getting worse as day by day, and you've got to think, exactly. And I think with these drugs are really effective, where you can monitor the effectiveness within 3 months, 6 months, rather than waiting a lot longer the time period, and you can have that one-on-one discussion with the patient at the same time. And I think you can see what you're doing. You've got to think these patients who have got a cardiovascular disease risk, really, they will go there day to day and probably not know anything about it until they've sit them down and talk them through it. By say, for example, I could have high cholesterol here, but I've never been checked. I've never had any symptoms or any side effects. These patients might be the same. Yes, they might have had a heart attack, but that might have just been a one-off episode and they've been fitting well ever since. But they don't know there's something that's brewing up in the background, which we can talk them through. Go, this is your lipid profile currently. This is what you need to be at the target, and that's what we're aiming for. These are the drugs that you're taking. Where do we go next? And I think at the same time, which is something which is we've got to keep getting across at the same time, put the patient at the forefront. make them decide what's the best option for themselves. Lay the cards out and go, which one do you think's better? You might be as simple as going, right, okay, you're on a atorvastatin 80, where do we go next? You've got ezetimibe, which is a tablet which might be more better to you. End of the day, it's all good and well us directing and thinking things. End of the day, if that patient's not going to take it, what are we doing? We're not going to gain anything. So I think it's them putting the pros and cons of everything to them and let them, like the patient-centred decision, isn't it? You know, going
shared
forward.
Shared decision-making. Yeah, exactly. Putting the patient at the centre.
Absolutely. But my experience has been that having explained everything to the patient, the fact that it's a new drug and so on, I've had very little negative feedback from the patient. They've all been, virtually all, been very happy to go along with this. And feedback from the patient as they've come through a second time for the second injection, there's been no problems whatsoever. They've all been very happy with it. So,
and just picking up what you said there, Matty, about you know that bottleneck and that time lag.
Yeah.
We did a calculation in one of the trust footprints in the northeast. It wasn't Newcastle; it was another area, and based on the number of lipid service clinic appointments that were available and the eligible population in that area, it would actually take 25 years to get all of the patients through secondary care to be initiated on that.
But that's where I think the role of a pharmacist helping out within it, you're increasing the capacity. And I think that's sitting in secondary care, because you've got to think, majority of these patients will be sitting in primary care, but there will be a high proportion of patients who are seen within a set specialty a lot of times because of their risk of further disease is high. If you can identify these and highlight it to the attention of the primary care to support it, what you're just going to gain so much benefits from doing it. You're cutting this lag and waiting for someone else to do it. If you can sit in that right area and you know you're going to catch people, you know what I mean, to eligible to then be taken further for further treatment, what we're going to gain so much benefits going forward. And especially the northeast, where we've already identified in terms of the second highest risk area in the UK for having cardiovascular disease or mortality from cardiovascular disease, we could take this by grasp it by our hands and go with it, you know. And I think this is something that it can roll and roll and roll. You got to think like a snowball down a mountain. It's only going to gather pace at an alarming rate, and I think this is something that it is gathering pace at all times.
And the other thing to consider is not everywhere has a commissioned lipid service. So for those patients, you know, really primary care is the only place that they can access lipid lowering therapies to that point in the pathway before you get to the specialist drugs. But those drugs that are green on formularies, you know, primary care is their only place that they can go if there is no lipid service, you know, in some trusts and some areas. So we've got to, I suppose, consider that equitable access. And if we focus the attention being on secondary care delivery, then that isn't really providing equitable access for our patients, really. I just wanted to have a quick discussion, really, around how health inequalities can be reduced by using that population health management system. You know, and thinking about what the impact might be and how that time frame might be shortened. You know, around being able to do that, you know, the number of patients you can see through primary care, I guess, is quicker when we multiply it up, isn't it? It's greater when we multiply it up than it is the number of patients you can see in secondary care.
And I think for primary care, part of their annual reviews, lipid profiles are within there, especially for these people at risk of who will be on the cardiovascular disease monitoring system, which has been put in place within primary care. There will be searching mechanisms to identify patients who are on their max tolerated statins where further intervention is needed. And I think this is what Barry will give further explanation to, is that these can be identified quite quickly through not extensive searches, ideally, to then bring them to the forefront to get them on these new drugs.
Yeah, so I think, first of all, as we've already said, that you should be able to, if you wanted to set yourself a bit of a target, if you reviewed all your vascular bloods coming through and the lipid profiles coming through, you should be able to do a massive amount of the impact in the first year should be quite considerable. I mean, I can't sort of say any figures about that, but it's quite clear to me that if you're optimising everyone who comes through, then it's going to have a massive impact on your cardiovascular morbidities and mortalities. So we've got the privilege, actually, of having not just clinical pharmacists on board, but clinical pharmacy technicians who have actually been able to do some searches for us. And so we have been able to identify all of those who have had a non-HDL cholesterol of above, say, 3 for the sake of argument. And we've been able to focus our attention on, if you like, the low-hanging fruit.
So you've tiered it. You've taken your worst and most high-risk first.
Exactly right. Yeah. Working from the worst down to the less worse, the better. And so if you like, done some front-loading work and done a bit of acceleration there. So two bites of the cherry, if you like. You've got the annual review, okay, but you've also got this opportunity of this front-loading work, or we have at least, to be able to do some early identification.
So quite a proactive approach then,
Harry. It's a proactive approach. I appreciate not everybody can do that, but we feel it's so important to be able to drive this forward. That's the approach that we've taken. And I think it certainly is reaping its benefits.
But with clinical technicians, they are a massive asset in themselves.
Yeah. Pharmacy
across
technicians.
Yeah. Pharmacy, yeah, exactly.
Gold
they are absolutely really good. And yeah. I think if you can get someone to do the triaging aspect of it, in terms of us, you get a much slicker process of interventions. And in the day, it's getting this patient to have what they need to get to the desired outcome. Like we keep saying, if these patients are certainly prevention patients, you aim for a target of their non-HDL cholesterol less than 2.5 millimoles per litre. You've got to think, the quickest you get a treatment into this patient, the best benefit that they're going to get, which is then going to reduce their risk. And you've got to think, their life is going to be unfortunately cut short because of their cardiovascular disease that they've got. If you can do something to try and reverse the effects or try and reduce the risk of having an event, that's great. That's, you know what I mean? That's putting everyone to the forefront, and that's what we should be doing throughout.
Fantastic. Mm. So lastly, Barry, have you got any golden nuggets or top tips or things that, you know, primary care might find really valuable? Anything that you would like to share that?
Yeah, I think it does take people to drive this forward. And so one of the objects of the podcast is really to inspire anyone who's listening out there to take this and to drive forward. So for myself, I have delayed retirement for 2 years because I think this is so important. So people who with a passion, like Matty and myself, and I know there's others out there as well, it's not just us two, there's others out there in the northeast and beyond who could do that. I think if GPs actually see that the work has been pushed onto them, but actually he's a valuable piece of work which they can entrust their pharmacy colleagues with, they're quite happy to do that. And I think it just gives itself to that thing about independent prescribing. So, you know, pharmacists in primary care generally tend to be independent prescribers. So it's just a golden opportunity, really, for the profession, but also for collaboration, as we've seen within primary care as well as with secondary care. And a good opportunity for education as well. So the idea is, I hope, that we leave a legacy, okay? So people are more lipid-minded, if you like, and that practice nurses would be able to take this on board, or whoever else you've got out there, to be able to drive this forward. And I just find the whole thing so exciting, really. It's a great development for us in primary care.
In terms of, from my top tips from obviously secondary care, in terms of what I'm identifying patients in the triage, is if someone isn't on atorvastatin 80, question it. Is it because this patient was put on it because of primary prevention purposes, and they haven't been put onto the relevant dose for secondary prevention? So you're not doing the full justice of that drug can do. Yeah. So in terms of getting from 20 atorvastatin to atorvastatin 80, that might sound a lot to a patient, but in terms of the reduction you get on their lipid profile is not that big. But that's the right step in the right direction of then thinking, where do we go next? Do we add an ezetimibe, or is this patient eligible for the injectables, which are the new ones, which is coming more and more to the forefront?
Thank you very much. And it's been fantastic to have this opportunity to chat to you both and get both of your input and your points of view and hear your enthusiasm and your commitment. And I think, you know, the patients of the Northeast are really lucky to have people like you on board that can help to... The thing is, you don't know whose lives you've saved, and you don't know which families you've impacted by reducing that risk, by that person not then having that heart attack or that stroke. But those people are out there. Those people are certainly out there, and that's really what we need to do, isn't it, is do our bit to save lives.
Absolutely, and I think it's a concept which can be adapted in many different places, and I think that's one thing one emphasises, that this is not just a two-man job. This is a job for everyone who is within the healthcare system. And it's how everyone puts everything together to get the biggest impact across a full population. And I think it's something now what we're doing is identifying these patients and getting them initiated on it, so then we can see these benefits. I would love to think in the next 5-10 years time that in terms of where the Northeast sits, in terms of mortality from cardiovascular disease, we're a lot more lower down on the pecking order. But this is something that I want to cross, not just say the Northeast, it's across the full board. So I think that's something that we can stride towards, can't we, Barry? And I think Nikki and everyone else's input to get to these targets that have been set. These should not be unreasonable targets at SF. We should be trying to get that across the board.
Fantastic aspirations, Matty. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you for listening to the Innovation in Healthcare podcast, produced by the Academic Health Science Network for the Northeast and North Cumbria. If you'd like to find out more about inclisiran and our cardiovascular disease prevention programmes, please visit the Improving Population Health section on our website at ahsn-nenc.org.uk. We will, of course, provide all the relevant links in this episode's show notes. Thank you again for listening. Thank you.